Hey, Ben, is the audio working? Okay, can you hear me okay?
Can you hear us now, Miles?
I like how yes. Keep warming and warming. It's so sensitive.
Okay, how does this work, Ben? Can you hear me?
Yes, yeah, I think we are ready to go.
Okay, so Lynn told me to put a headset on, so I found an old one in the bottom of a drawer somewhere, probably like 10 years old. So hopefully the audio is working okay.
Sounds great.
Are you getting that echo feedback on your end?
Yes. Yeah, when you go on mute, though, hopefully it'll fix that.
Yeah. Okay, given the challenges with this, Abby, do you want to go ahead and walk us through the agenda?
Yep, happy to.
Thank you for this.
There we go. Okay, our closed session has completed, and we welcome the board, staff, and public back to our board meeting. Our agenda today includes the executive director report, a budget update, a presentation on three board policies, the introduction of the Golden Spike Inlandport Project area. I love that name, by the way, in Box Elder County, and consideration to approve the Virk Industrial Park Project plan here in Spanish Fork. We know the local community leaders are here and anticipate that this project area in partnership with the Inland Port will pay off in regional economic growth and opportunity for many years to come. Our agenda today will allow for a period of public comment that is anticipated to begin at approximately 3:30. For those of you in attendance, in order to speak during the public comment, please fill out a public comment card. Where's Diana? There she is. She's back there. She will number it according to those that she receives, and the comment cards will be accepted up until the start of the comment period. For those of you online that wish to participate virtually, please wait to enter the queue until instructed. Any hands raised in the period queue prior to that time will be cleared. Just a reminder, we do this every meeting. All comments will be no more than 2 minutes in length. We will alter between in-person and virtual. Please know that we may not get to everyone, as we invite you to submit your comments in writing to the inlandportauthority.utah.gov. So now we're going to go to the approval from the June 23rd meeting. We have that in our packets, board members.
Madam Chair, I make a motion that we approve the June 23rd, 2023 minutes.
Thank you.
And I'll second that.
Perfect. All in favor?
All right.
Thank you. Ben, the time is yours to give us a report.
All right. Maybe I'll hold that just slightly away. So we're gonna do our best getting through this. I do apologize for there's a little bit of an echo in here, but so let me just talk a little bit about the port, some of the happenings over the last 30 days or so, and let me first welcome everybody to Spanish Fork. Mayor, City Council, thank you so much for having us here. We appreciate the city and the staff for their amazing efforts to help us create something that's truly unique, something that we hope will be economic focal area for generations to come here in Utah County. So it's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I see the mayor. I've seen several city council. We'll have a chance, hopefully, to talk a little bit more about what we're doing here in Spanish Fork throughout the meeting. Let me first say that we had a chance within the last 30 days to be part of the governor's trade mission to France and Germany. And it was really a pretty phenomenal experience. We spent the first couple of days with the Governor's Trade Mission, actually in Paris, meeting with companies at the Paris Air Show, where we had a tremendous opportunity to work with some of our stakeholder aerospace companies and life sciences that have a presence and or an opportunity to have a presence in the Northwest Quadrant of Salt Lake City. So we were really excited for that opportunity, but the real meat of the experience came in Western Germany. For those who've wondered and thought about what the, not just a port facility, but what a rail network and transportation system could look like that's very sustainable, that is really something that has benefited the economy and the communities that it serves. Western Germany is a really good place to look and to learn. So we had a chance in Saarbrücken and Frankfurt to get a much better feel for rail and how it's impacting the European marketplace. And it was really interesting to see just how much the German and European leaders have really understood the importance of rail, both passenger and cargo. And so it was a really cool experience to be able to see that on the ground. I am going to note that I teach a class at the University of Utah. One of the things that I tell my students is that when you go to a new city or you go to a new region for the first time, it's like reading a book. And the way you read the book is you look for different types of indicators and different kind of types of tells what's happening in that community. Where is investment? Where is disrepair? What types of retail? Where is retail? What types of buildings, businesses? One of the things I noticed in Germany is that there is a lot of investment into rail. And the what we heard at every location is the reason why is because the European Union has put such an emphasis on reducing carbon emissions within their member countries. And so what we are seeing as a result of that is a significant investment in rail and a higher percentage of shippers that were then using rail as opposed to those that were just using standard over-the-road truck. We saw things that were really, really positive. Go ahead. That's all good. We saw things that were really positive in terms of investment in a way and because it was sustainable. And so one of the things that I took away is that is we're really having this conversation about how we reduce carbon emissions in the state of Utah. Rail is a solution. Anybody that would tell you something different is wrong, flat out. So I think we want to continue to have good, meaningful conversations. But for those who, from a cargo and a passenger standpoint, don't recognize that rail is a solution to cleaner air and lower carbon emissions in the state of Utah, I would just say that's flat out wrong. And so we want to be able to keep building a sustainable Utah. We want to have less dependency on building roads. We can't do that unless we've got better access points for businesses to be able to put cargo onto rail and as a relationship to that, put people onto rail as well. So we saw an incredible example of a very, very sustainable transportation system, something that I think we would definitely try to emulate here in the United States. And it was certainly worthwhile. We had a chance to travel with several board members, but also with BZI still. And with other companies as well. Is that any better? All right. I think we're working now. So, we felt very positive about this visit. I did have some slides, Larry. I don't know if we're able to show those or not, but, we saw some facilities. Again, we're not talking about huge cranes, but we're talking about just, basic loading facilities and how you step up. You start small. You can start small and then you step up. So not every logistics project has to be a major port, but it can just start small and ultimately elevate to something that is much more meaningful for the community that it serves. We saw even in more rural parts of Germany, full-on loading facilities. So for those who say we are not able to do it here in rural Utah, have logistics facilities in rural Utah, I would say that's absolutely not the case. I think there are good examples worldwide where we can, and they've shown that. Let me also say we were able to participate in the Cedar City, Iron County legislative event. We had representation there. We felt like it was very positive to tell the story about what's happening in Cedar City and in Iron County with the rail facility that we've been working there with BZI still. Again, things are moving forward. So for those who have been, whether I would say critics or opponents or naysayers, I would say we're absolutely showing that we need more rail access here in the state of Utah. And as we do that, we're going to be able to attract better businesses, not only to the Northwest Quadrant, but also statewide. So we feel like we're definitely on the right path. We're going to have good, hopefully everything's set up. We're going to have a good track record to show for our work. And I think that'll happen probably sooner than what anybody expects. And that's part of which helps bring us here to Spanish Fork today. We have a tremendous opportunity in front of us. So with that, I will get out of the way of the board and we can continue on with the business of the agenda, Madam Chair.
Awesome, Ben. Any comments from board members? Miles, anything from you? Are these working outward?
I think
only. Yes. Can you?
Okay.
Oh, Abby. If you hear me, I was going to say, Ben, great. It's great to learn best practices out in the world and figure out how to apply them here in the state of Utah.
I'll just say very quickly that I participated with Ben along with Victoria on our trip to Germany. Two things. They have an incredible network of not being dependent on road. They also have an incredible amount of focus on manufacturing. But what I was the most surprised and pleased about is especially the Cedar City project, because we are most familiar with that, how much it aligned with what is working, what has worked there for generations, and introducing the logistics with the manufacturing and the direct access to rail is so important. And this is why we're here today, to talk about that exact nexus of getting the product directly to rail, but also manufacturing the product in proximity of the logistics area and inside the logistics area. So appreciate you putting it together. It was a lot of work, but we did get to go to a lot of cool places and see a lot of cool things. Next up on our agenda, we're going to talk about the budget. So Ben Buys is going to talk about the incentive application for the Northwest Quadrant project area. Ben, it's all yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to hit the budget update real quick first, and then we'll get into the incentive application. So every quarter, as we discussed a few months ago, we'll talk about the budget, see where we're at. So this latest budget summary is kind of the last 3 months of the fiscal year that ended June 30th. We still have some closeout items to complete, but we're getting a pretty close picture to where we're at for the fiscal year. So we kind of had two main categories last year in our operating expenses and the inland port development activities. Operating expenses, you can see the total appropriated budget was $6.2 million. We're currently at 5.7. Everyone knows we made a lot of changes in the organization in the last 12 months. You'll see that in the budget. We have a lot of variances. But the good news is we're under budget overall, which is kind of where we're aiming to be. So operating budget, we're at $5.7 million, so we're about $500,000 under budget there. And our inland port development activities and our fees and transfers, we didn't have some big transfers that we had to do budgeted, which you can see those big variances. The big one, the $6.2 million that we had to send over for our bond was not budgeted, so that's there. But we're under budget by about $700,000 in that, overall, I should say, about $200,000 in the inland port development activities category. So just want to give you an update there. Next time we have a budget update, we'll have completed financial statements. The state auditor is going to be doing our audit this year of those financial statements. Squire did those last year. They've cancel that contract. State auditor will be doing that for us. So I'm preparing those now, finishing up closeout, and we'll have those for the board next time we do a budget update. Also part of your electronic version, it's not in the printed version, but in your electronic version of the packet, we have the total payments made to every vendor for the year, as well as the vendor payment detail for the last quarter. Last time we did a budget update, we had him for the first three quarters. So if there's any questions on who we've paid, how much we paid, what those were for, those should be found in your online version of your packet. Happy to take any questions on that budget update.
Any questions? Miles, are you able to hear us?
I can hear you if you can hear me right now, but whenever I go off mute for some reason, it cuts the audio in the room.
We can hear you when you unmute and start talking, so we'll just keep going at this pace.
Okay, perfect. If I'm talking and you want me to shut up, you start like waving your arms or something because I can see you. I just can't hear what's in the room. Yep, that's exactly it. So that'll be my shut up, go back on mute sign. I did have one question on
this. This is going to be
fun. Yes. And again, I feel bad for not being there in person, which would make it all this a little bit easier. Ben, really quick on the budget. Sorry, it scrolled down a little bit. But I know that we've invested a lot more in professional services than we anticipated, and you touched on that. In terms of overall personnel and payroll, we're a little under budget, but can you speak just a little bit to what those additional professional services are for and how we see that balancing out over the next 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, absolutely, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that question. Professional services include a whole range of things. We have consultants on there that we have several of. We have our Exoro and BWP. We switched over that contract this year. That's on there. Keychain, when they were still getting paid from us, that was on there. So we have a whole lot of things in that professional service. Honestly, that $1.17 million amount was probably never realistic to start out the year. So, like you said, we've balanced that out with some savings in other areas, including personnel. I'm hoping that as we move into next year and the budget that was approved by the board in May will be a better reflection of where we're at for FY24 that we're started in July 1st. So does that answer everything?
Yep. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. Do you want to move on to the Northwest Quadrant?
Yes. I will switch what I'm sharing. So thank you, Madam Chair. We have our first incentive proposal for the board's consideration. This did go to our incentive subcommittee, which we met a couple months ago. That subcommittee is composed of myself along with Senator Stevenson and Ryan Stark. So I'll speak for the three of them and say this was very well received, unanimously approved by that group for a recommendation for the full board to consider that. So what we have is, if I can get my slides to advance. There we go. Northrop Grumman is our applicant for this. So in terms of what we're looking for in the Northwest Quadrant, just a perfect match of a targeted industry that we had identified in our project area plan and budget, very, very much aligned with our focus, high skill, high wage jobs, advanced manufacturing type of work, really increase the property values, increase the number of good jobs in the area. So, really happy with, obviously Northrop Grumman has a huge presence in the state, really excited to have them be a bigger part, of the state of Northwest Quadrant.
And Ben, can I add to, we're not going to make him say anything, but I do want to recognize Andy Perucci from Northrop Grumman, who's here with us today. Thank you, Andy, for being here. And I would just add to what Ben said. I think this has been through the internal review process, but when we're talking about creating real economic inertia, it's not warehouse distribution that's going to move the needle. It's advanced manufacturing. It's forward facing jobs. It's really companies that you can build an entire local community and economy around. And Northrop is exactly in that boat. So I think we're ecstatic to be able to work with them on this potential opportunity.
Thank you, Ben. So this is a manufacturing composite structures for rocket motor cases. It's going to be located at Copper Crossing, which if you go back to our June board meeting, we approved a new Stadler contract. Part of that was building additional rail west from Stadler. That's going right towards Copper Crossing. So rail is going to be right in this area. It's about a 300,000 square foot facility. The building was being built, but it's going to require extensive modifications to get it into an advanced manufacturing space. So it's about $30 million building. It's going to require about $80 million in additional investment to get it to the spot where Northrop Grumman can do manufacturing in it. So based on our project area plan and budget, target industry like this, up to $100 million in capital expenditures, makes them eligible for a 10% property tax incentive. So that is the proposed incentive, 10% over 25 years, provided that they are there in the Northwest Quadrant that entire time. That will be subject to facility daily water requirements. As you know, we've adopted Salt Lake City's water requirements on incentives. That's part of our project area plan and budget as well. And we'll do a fully signed contract with them before we complete and start any incentives. The good news is it's all post-incentive. So once they pay their property taxes, we can then rebate them 10% of that. That is all I have. I have a proposed motion that I know we'll take towards the end of the meeting. I'm happy to answer any questions from the committee on this.
Senator, I know you were, I'm putting you on the spot being just showing up here, but I know you were on the internal review committee on this project. And if you wanted to say anything about this project.
I would probably hold off a minute. I've been through a harrowing experience.
Did you go on the zipper next door? Or?
No, I've been around. we do feel that this is a important project. I think it met the review process, so we went through and we're just happy to be here. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may,
of course.
Just a question and a comment. So, Ben, how many jobs is this anticipated to bring into the area?
I look for Stephen for help. 500?
Andy, do you want to?
Andy, if you'll just introduce yourself online.
My name is Andy Perucci with Northrop Grumman Corporation. So to your question about jobs, this is one part of a broader expansion of our overarching Backus plant. So the overall expansion will incorporate around 500 new jobs. This part, it's hard to define exactly, but it's part of an overarching contract. So this is going to be used for, we're going to be making solid rocket motors for, it's for ULA, United Launch Alliance, which will be launching them for Amazon Kuiper satellite constellation. It was part of the world's largest space launch contract that was announced a couple of years ago. So we don't have a firm number on the exact number of jobs, but it's going to be in the 100 to 250 positions at this facility. But they're also going to rotate around from this location to also other parts of our Backus plant footprint.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And my comment, if I may, Madam Chair, I just want to thank Northrop Grumman for what they do for the state as a whole. I know they're one of the largest, if not the largest, private employer in the state. And having them and their presence out in the Northwest Quadrant is exactly what we have envisioned as far as types of high-paying manufacturing jobs in that area. And so thank you, and excited to see proposals like this coming forward. I think it meets the mission. And again, having it incorporated into REL is also a big component that we're excited about. So great work, team. Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you. I've collected my thoughts. Northrop Grumman has been a big player in the state of Utah for a long time. And my district is up in the shadow of Pillar Force Base, and they have been, they're very busy, they're very active militarily, and they're very active all around the base. And they have purchased other companies that have been active in Utah for a long, long time. But they are, as our good representative just stated, they are a major player. And they've been a very good corporate player for a long while. And we just, it's good to see them expand here. These are great jobs. The jobs that they do create are amazing, and they continue to grow in the state of Utah. So I'd like to thank them. Andy, appreciate your comments. You kind of got me back on track. Thank you.
Of course. Go ahead.
I've been thrilled that I get to represent the district where Northrop in Salt Lake City has been functioning historically. And I'm thrilled that we're using this money to create jobs that have economic mobility for my neighbors who are historically either new Americans or the blue collar workforce that literally keeps Utah running at all times. So thank you for expanding that imprint. A procedural clarification, when we do incentives, is it a developer agreement that we enter into with the companies?
I am going to say that it's actually an incentive agreement. So we're basing our process in a similar manner because there are different funding sources off the EdTIF agreement that the governor's office currently employs. And so we will have a actual, I don't think it'll be a development agreement, and it's not a grant agreement. It's probably a hybrid just to quantify what an incentive agreement is, something that's kind of quantifiable in between there and that we don't give it up front. We do have strings that are attached to it to safeguard the funds. But at the same time, it's not a developer agreement in the sense of what a standard DA would look like.
So if possible, the transition from truck served to rail, of course, we know from our experience in Europe is going to help with so many things. But in addition to that, I'd love to see anything about expanding the urban canopy. We know just by nature that that northwest quadrant is a heat island, and adding pavement and 300,000 square foot of asphalted rooftop could really amplify that. So anything we can do to ameliorate those effects as part of an agreement that's enforceable would offer more breathing space. We know that you are good neighbors and we can come talk to you about planting trees in that as well. But anything that we could codify to offer protections and to keep ameliorating those environmental concerns would be really amazing. But this is exactly the kind of thing we want to see. This is a water responsive industry. This is economic mobility for my neighbors. So thank you.
If I may just add to that, I think Victoria brings up a good, brings up a concern in regards to the environment. And I think as we contemplated and negotiated the tax differential, from Salt Lake City to come towards Inland Port, there's a portion of that that is used inside Inland Port. I think, addressing the concerns that Victoria brought up is something that we really should be looking at moving forward with that money.
Great. Ben, anything else from you?
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Perfect. Again, we're going to take a final vote on all these motions at the end of the meeting after we have public comment. But now we're going to move over to Amy Brown Coffin, to our Chief Compliance Officer. There are two policies. And if you remember, she always introduces the policies the meeting before, gives the public time to comment. It's all posted on our website. And then we go to the next meeting to approve those. So these are two new ones that we will approve in a future meeting. Amy, all yours.
Thank you. So thinking about one of the policies that we have not negotiated, but it has been a year. And based upon our work of these policies, we are coming up to our new call. So this is the open and public meeting policy that from the PGLI. We have two other policies that are going to be consolidated with this policy. That's going to be the DO2 electronic meeting, and also the
Sorry. All right. I'll start again. My apologies. So with the open and public meeting policy, we're going to be consolidating that with the electronic meetings and meeting transparency policy. And with that, some of the changes that we have made around this is based upon also the public commentary process. And I think as people will appreciate it, what we want to do is as we have any in-person or hybrid meetings, that we want to allow the in-person commenters first, and then if time remains, allow for virtual. Right now, as the policy stands, we go in-person and then virtual and stagger that way until the comment period is up. We also added roles and responsibilities to this policy as well. The other policy is the media policy, BPO3. This, again, is one that we have existing. We have enhanced it further to include roles and responsibilities and added some sections around press releases, advisories, notifications, social media and website, and the use of the logo. And these two are going to be ones that we will be seeking approval for in the next meeting next month. The policy that we're going to be looking for approval today is the personnel BP11. Because of some recommendations around enhancing this, as well as feedback that we had our representative at DHRM review this, we have updated the leave and benefits and salary and benefits to really clarify the UIPA recruals and differentials, as well as that the difference between UIPA and the state of Utah employment. Also, we've added some more clarifications and sections around the work schedule, a working remotely section, and then adopted a lot of the rules for 7, 7, 6, and 7 for just respectively for employee benefits, severance benefits, administrative leave, military leave, leave without pay, furlough, FEMLA, workers' compensation law, and parental and postpartum leave. And so those are the changes that we're looking for the board to approve today with this policy. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. Any comments on from any of the board members on the personnel policy that we will approve later in the meeting? Okay, perfect. Now we get to hear from Stephen and Lynn. They will discuss the draft project area plan for the Box Elder County called the Golden Spike Inland Port Project Area. And we have some guests here from Box Elder County as well that they will introduce. All yours, Stephen.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that, Vice Chair Osborne.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm going to try and project as best I can. Okay. I appreciate the team here at Spanish Fork for hosting us today and accommodating this. And I know this is a beautiful new room, and I'm very grateful we get to be here. It's wonderful that we're in Spanish Fork. We are going to talk a little bit about Box Elder before we get to Spanish Fork, so bear with us just a little bit. But when we do the final presentation for a plan, we do like to be in the neighborhood. Where that's happening, that means when we present a draft, we may be in Cedar City, Utah, we may be in Box Elder, we may be elsewhere. So before we get to Spanish Fork, we'll come back to that. Again, Vice Chair Osborne, Chairman Hansen online, and members of the board, we're very excited to present the draft project area plan and budget for what we're calling the Golden Spike Inland Port Project Area in Box Elder County. The project area plan and budget draft is included in your meeting materials. This document was shared ahead of the meeting and is also available on our website. The project area plan and budget draft includes information regarding both the logistical, economic, and environmental considerations of the project area. As an overview, the Golden Spike Inland Port project area will include multiple non-contiguous areas that are regionally vital in Box Elder County, Brigham City, Tremont City, and Garland City. So it is a unique project area in that we've got multiple participants over the region. Collectively, those areas will represent a region of economic significance in northern Utah, both supporting and driving advancements in efficiency and the logistical needs of the region, as well as promoting responsible economic growth and prosperity to the benefit of all of northern Utah. In addition to UIPA's current and planned project areas, the Golden Spike Inland Port adds another critical piece to that puzzle in meeting Utah Inland Port Authority's statutory mission to support and maximize long-term economic benefits for the state of Utah. As members of the board are aware, we do have some statutory requirements that we need to meet in order to establish a project area. There needs to be a public purpose. We need to demonstrate that there's a public benefit to the development project. It needs to be economically sound and also promote the statutory objectives that are outlined in statute for UIPA. Additionally, each governmental body must invite the Utah Inland Port Authority to create that project area. And I'm glad to say that all three participating cities, as well as Box Elder County, passed those resolutions over the last few months to support creation of the port project area. So on the next slide, give you just a little bit of a map of what that project area will look like in the participating cities and counties. We've also invited some speakers here today from the county and those cities that are participating to speak. Online is Commissioner Stan Summers for Box Elder County. For Brigham City, we've got Community and Economic Development Director Paul Larson. For Garland City, we have City Manager Valerie Clausen, and we also have Mayor Linda Bourne here as well. Thank you for coming. And we're hoping to have online for Tremont and Sean Warnke. Unfortunately, was not able to make it today. at this time, if we are able to accommodate it, I would like to turn some time over to Commissioner Summers to give us a little bit of insight into what he feels are the public benefit and the purpose of a project area in Box Elder County. Commissioner Summers, if you are able to go off mute.
I am off mute. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Commissioner. Thank you.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for that opportunity. I've loved listening to the rest of the conference about what's going on. But, you know, back in the late 1800s, we had a little event here called when the Transcontinental Railroad got together and brought transportation to Utah. And since then, Box Elder County has been a huge part of the transportation in the area. So if Utah's the crossroads of the West, then Box Elder County is the crossroads of Utah. So if we continue down this path, which we think will help not only our county economically, but the state with distribution and the West. The reason that we have people like Procter & Gamble, Nucor, Autoliv, Northrop Grumman, and all these companies in Box Elder County is because they know of the logistics that are available here. You'd said a little bit about Northrop Grumman already, and we are glad that they started here with Thiokol back in the 60s. And now that they're going to reach out to the moon again and further, we appreciate them being here and also being a part of this transportation. We understand that transportation is not only over the road, but it's also going to be in the air. And so whatever we can do in this area will continue to help not only us, our citizens, the state citizens, but people in the West and the nation. Am I good?
Good. Appreciate it. Really appreciate you being online. And I know you've had some family issues to deal with today. So we are very grateful that we've had you here today.
Thanks, you guys.
I would like to turn the time over to Lynn Mayer, Manager of Business Development and Project Areas, who, along with our guest speakers, will provide an overview of the commodities and logistical benefits of an inland port project area in the region, as well as our industries of focus for recruitment. Lynn?
Thank you, Stephen. This project area is such a cool place, and it's really exciting to the port staff and everything because it has so many opportunities, and we're really excited for it. They have imports and exports moving in and out of this region, and as they expand their infrastructure and rail lines, we know that they will make this region of Utah even better and will become a vital hub for lots of collaboration and benefits across the state. Brigham City's portion of the Golden Spike Inland Port Project area includes sites that are clustered around the SR-13 interchange on I-15 and I-84, for those of you who are familiar with the area. These sites are at the convergence of interstate highway, rail, and air transportation routes. The proposed project area is located on both sides of I-15, with great proximity to both the Malad Rail and Ogden subdivisions. The area lends itself well to access shortline and national rail systems, as well as the Brigham City Airport. The area identified near Iowa String Road, 6800 West, is well situated to take advantage of the Malad Rail subdivision, and it could provide an additional point for loading agricultural commodities with the addition of a spur that could potentially be expanded into a loop track depending on the demand dynamics in this area. The Garland-Tremont portion of this area is also on the Malad Rail subdivision and currently has a single rail-fed industrial space already in use. The development of infrastructure in this area benefits imported and exported commodities. As you can see on the slide, this area already has a strong base of imports for sports equipment, auto manufacturing, and furniture distribution. And there are a number of exports, including dairy, fruit, and grains. Infrastructure in the area allows these items to get to a broader market more efficiently and will help to keep the costs low for these producers. Sitting next to me now is Paul Larson, the Community Economic Development Director for Brigham City, to talk specifically about this focus and impact in the area.
Thank you. Is everybody able to hear me? I've been told I have a quiet voice.
It won't project your voice.
Okay. I'll just have to use my kid voice. Yes, we appreciate the opportunity to participate with the Inland Port Authority. We've been working closely with the staff. We very much appreciate them. They've been very open. They've been very responsive. We hope that we've been responsive in our information gathering, and I know there's some more work to do, but we believe that The Brigham City portion of the project area has some assets and some characteristics that really set it apart. It's the convergence, and I know this happens elsewhere along the Wasatch Front, but not a lot. But Interstate 15, Union Pacific Railroad, and air transportation that all come together right there. The Brigham City Regional Airport currently has a runway of 8,900 feet. We are planning to extend that to 10,000 feet, and we believe it's got significant opportunities for transport, air transport of cargo, as well as just facilitating business travel associated with businesses that are both in the port area and outside the port area in our region. There are some things we need to work out regarding the airport. It's currently a economic development project area with the Brigham City Redevelopment Agency. We're working towards an understanding of how that can work, how those things can layer or not. Regardless, the airport will be a major player in the inland port in Box Elder County. We also have the main line of Union Pacific Railroad that goes through Brigham City and continues north over into Cache Valley and north to Pocatello and throughout the Northwest. There's a great opportunity along that line, we believe, to have the transition point for rail to go from interstate or air traffic to rail traffic and vice versa. And that will take probably a few years of cooperation between the local governments, UDOT, and the Inland Port Authority, but we are excited for that possibility. And if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
We'll show those at you later.
Okay. Thank you.
Paul, thank you so much for being here. A lot of these people made a very long drive to get down here today, and we really appreciate them coming and sharing a local perspective of what this inland port will do for them. Continuing on that, the industries of focus and recruitment, part of establishing a project area gives us the ability to support recruitment through post-performance incentives. These incentives allow us to focus on a very specific industry that will truly benefit these communities. And you can see a quick list of those types of industries that could be considered for incentives in these areas. This is particularly valuable in the Garland and Tremont area, as the parcels under consideration are already rail served there. I would like to introduce Valerie Claussen sitting next to me now, who's the city manager of Garland, to talk a little more about how this could benefit their community.
Thank you.
Oh, there we go.
There you go. Thank you. I'm Valerie Claussen. I'm Garland has 2,600 people, so they don't have a full-time city manager. I'm a contract planner. So thank you. I got promoted, but I do backfill a lot of their functions that a city manager would have to because of their size. So, but yes, I'm with Planning Outpost. But in terms of the recruitment factor, that the small, as I mentioned, 2,600 population, and it's, we can't compete, right? Like there's nothing, but the inland port and the opportunities we have with recruitment is that we can compete to incentivize these substantial and very desirable businesses to relocate here in the state, and can be competitive as even a financial level playing field to larger markets outside of the state. We're seeing this happen in real time, and it's really exciting. And the other thing that the mayor and I wanted to share is that we're grateful for the inland port in that the resources for economic development, we don't have a specialist on staff or even a department, which these kind of packages take a lot of professionals. And we've been able to have a consultant team of professionals that do economic development all the time. And they're able to establish these project areas and the budgets correctly and efficiently. Again, things, the opportunities we would have missed and not been able to recruit. And the other thing is actually seeing project areas in other cities just die on the vine because they can't get the interlocals and all that. And so we're grateful for the streamlined opportunities we have in working with Inland Port. And as Lynn already mentioned, our site already has the rail. We have the unique situation where we've got to get the road. We've got to get some infrastructure with the road to the site that's more appropriate. And again, we appreciate all the cooperation we've had with staff on our project area.
Thank you so much, Valerie. Thank you to you and Mayor for making the trip as well. We do appreciate it and for the insight. Stephen, I'll turn this back over to you.
Thank you very much. And again, I'll just echo that a third time. Thank you so much for making the trip down here. Next time we'll see you in Box Elder County. So a little less of a drive for you. With that said, as you've heard from our speakers, the Golden Spike Inland Port project area not only exceedingly satisfies the objectives of the Utah Inland Port Authority, laid out in statute, but also that the project area aligns perfectly with the local and regional goals of the cities and counties where this project area will reside. We've demonstrated that the conditions and timing are perfect to move forward with this project area, both economically and logistically. We do welcome any questions, comments, feedback from the board as we look to move forward and further refining this plan. We do expect to come back to you at our next board meeting to seek final approval as we look to move forward with creation of the Golden Spike Inland Port project area. Thank you.
Any comments, questions from the board, Ben, from you either?
I'll defer to the board. No, let me just say then that with regards to those who wonder, you know, you're in Spanish Fork this month. We're going to be in Box Elder next month, yes, and we're going to be in another location the month after and another location the month after. These project areas, as we're building out a network statewide, they are absolutely critical. And those who really were ready, I would count as some of the greatest leaders of our communities in the state. So Mayor Bourne, thank you for being here. For Commissioner Summers, for others, I would say this about Iron County, certainly, and here in Spanish Fork as well. Communities that were really ready when the opportunity arose. So thank you to all those communities that we're working with. We feel like the opportunity up in Box Elder is going to be incredibly unique. It is the coolest, maybe second coolest, just right behind VERC. Maybe they're the same. I think we've got two really cool project area names in both your Spanish Fork and in Box Elder County. But these are major economic opportunities. And I just want to highlight this. It's because we're working together. And I feel like that collaboration and coordination, thank you to those speakers that really highlighted that. But it really is a process. So thank you to all those elected officials that we're working with.
Any other comments from the board? Miles, from you? Okay, wonderful. It's online, posted, Stephen, our website. So any of the public members could look at it. I will just mention, this is our first project where we've crossed city lines. So this is four jurisdictions. This is pretty incredible that the four of you came to terms, came to agreements in the month of May and June on this project area. Look forward to hearing more about it next month. So thanks for coming up. All right. Well, let's talk about the real reason why we're here in Spanish Fork, Stephen.
Yep, you're not done with me yet.
As Ben's going to put it to vote here, VERC.
Can I say we were trying to get to this project at 3:30.
Did we do it?
Daniel nailed it right on the.
Woo-hoo.
Well done.
All right.
Made it. A little bit behind.
Well,
I was just trying to get to the meeting.
Chairman Hansen and distinguished members of the board. We are excited to come back to review our final project area plan and budget for an inland port project area in Spanish Fork. We are now calling the VERC Industrial Park Inland Port Project Area,
Stephen, can I interrupt you? What does that – are you someone going to tell us?
I'm going to let Dave answer that for you.
Don't spoil it.
Because he'll do a better job with that. And I do want to introduce Dave Anderson, who is the Community and Economic Development Director. And he will speak on the purpose and intent of a project area in Spanish Fork. Before we do that, I do just want to recap a couple of things for the board. First, the key dates. On May 2nd, the Spanish Fork City Council in this chamber passed a resolution supporting the creation of a port inland port project area. We held our first draft meeting with the board on May 11th. Last week, the Spanish Fork City Council reviewed an interlocal agreement supporting the project area, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And of course, we meet with you today. with the idea and hope that we will approve the final project area. Just a quick summary. The location in Spanish Fork is significantly and economically important to Spanish Fork's location and to Utah County. Utah County, as I think we all know, is one of the fastest growing metropolitan areas. It is pacing with Salt Lake County on industrial growth. A port project in this area, and this will echo with what you kind of hear of other project area plans and budgets. It's at the confluence of I-15, U.S. Highway 6, which ultimately connects to I-70, and runs adjacent to the UP Union Pacific line, which connects to the ports of Long Beach and L.A. At the heart of the project area is a regional airport. UIPA participation can support the critical flow of goods in the area, opening up additional export and import opportunities for regional businesses. Since our review of the project area plan and budget in May, the only significant update is the addition of an interlocal agreement between Spanish Fork City and the Utah Inland Port Authority. And that interlocal agreement, which is detailed in the project documents that were attached, it really outlines agreements made to specifically support some pre-existing agreements with Spanish Fork City and the Nebo School District. With that said, I would like to turn the time over to Dave Anderson to talk a little bit more about the public purpose and benefit and help us explain what VIRC Inland Port means, or Industrial Park, excuse me, Dave, what it means.
Mr. Smith, thank you, Chairman, members of the board. You can really welcome me to Spanish Fork. It's great having you here. This has been exciting for us to work on. Before I touch on VIRC, I also want to say that we immensely appreciate your staff. We have outstanding staff, as was mentioned earlier. We wouldn't be here today without their effort. I really appreciate that. VIRC, I don't speak Icelandic. I don't think any of us on staff, none of our elected officials do.
Does that help? Try that. But just by way of maybe a little bit of Spanish Fork trivia. Spanish Fork is home to the largest population of people of Icelandic descent outside of Iceland in the world.
Really?
So a portion of Spanish Fork originally settled by Icelanders. We have a sister city in Iceland. And the president of Iceland, I believe, has visited Spanish Fork more than once. There is something of a relationship there. We're not great at picking names for anything. That is tough. So the best that we could do here was to try to come up with something that related to what we're trying to accomplish, which is really industry, work, employment. And again, somebody might prove us wrong, but it's our understanding that VIRC, V-E-R-K, in Icelandic is something like job, work, employment, something like that.
That's wonderful.
Is absolutely what we're after.
Our friends, member of the media, that should be your headline for tomorrow. VIRC.
Again, welcome. Thank you. I am going to do my best to not repeat anything that I said in your May board meeting. I beg your pardon if I do. What we're working on here, frankly, is very complicated. A lot of moving parts. A number of different groups need to come together to be able to make what we're trying to accomplish actually happen. And we're certainly moving in that direction. There is a great sense of partnership that exists today between Spanish Fork City, our elected officials, our staff, and the people really that ultimately are going to make things happen, which are private developers. What we hope to use here by way of tax differential to put some pipe in the ground, build some roads, build some power lines and things like that. The funds that we'll expend to make that happen, or what we hope to make happen, will be a fraction of the investment that will be made by private developers that are responding to marketplace influences to meet a demand that we think is very, very strong. Now, the complicated part of this aside, Spanish Fork City's motivation, I think, is really, really simple. And to describe that, I'm going to refer to a document that we use to help guide land use decisions, our general plan.
And I'll start by referencing goal C.1, which is to provide a variety of employment opportunities for the residents of Spanish Fork and surrounding area. That's the goal. That certainly is a big part of what we're trying to accomplish as the local municipality that will host this area. Now, some policies that relate to that goal. First of all, and this is the simple part of it, develop the northern part of the community with light industrial uses. Northern part of the community precisely aligned with Spanish Fork City's land use policy. Location really matters. The next one, policy C.1.2. Attempt to maintain an adequate supply of industrial land. Now that coupled with C.1.3, which talks about having sites for industrial development to happen where sanitary sewer, stormwater management, wastewater, police and fire protection, basically where utilities are available, that's really where we fall short today. We don't have an adequate supply of industrial land in a community that is at the junction of major transportation corridors, a community where multiple rail lines exist today that serve multiple businesses in the community. The ability of our area logistically to support more commerce and economic activity is tremendous. Spanish Fork City's ability as a whole to treat wastewater with, for example, a $150 million wastewater treatment plant that's under construction now, and that will be operational in the next couple of years. Tremendous capacity will come with that. Our ability to provide large quantities of power as a public power municipality, likewise. A tremendous capability. Same could be said for water and other utilities. But today, we cannot provide those utilities to this area the way that we need to really tap into economic potential to make the kinds of things happen that we believe the market is ready for. And we believe that because we are working with, I don't think I'm going out on a limb at all to say, with the best collection of 5 or 6 private development groups that we could have in the community. I don't want to mention any by name for fear of missing somebody, but it is a who's who of different groups that have built tens of millions of square feet of industrial space for manufacturing, for distribution, for all different types of uses that, again, align with Spanish Fork's long range land use vision. We absolutely believe that having this port area created and being able to work with the tools that that affords our city to employ is the best way to also put our policy C.1.6 into play, which to encourage master planned development in our industrial area. This is how we make sure that things happen in an orderly fashion. We don't allow development to proceed unless we can provide utilities, unless streets, roads, and the like are ready to support development that happens. And we believe that the creation of this port area is the best way to make sure that things are happening in a deliberate, well-planned way to take advantage of the situation, which, again, from our perspective, it's tremendous. The story that we have to tell about giving companies access to the transportation that exists today in Spanish Fork, it's an easy sell. But when we tell folks that we're a few years out on being able to take their wastewater effluent or to get power to them or different things like that, then that immediately takes us out of the game and, just continues to leave us with untapped potential. So, like I said, I think our motives here are really simple. employment's a big deal for Spanish Fork. It's never back to the origin of the community. It's never been just a bedroom community. It's always been a center for commerce of different types. We think there's a lot of opportunity and room for that to continue to grow. Once again, thank you for being here. I'm happy to answer any questions if the time becomes appropriate for that.
Dave, thank you so much. And I want to say on behalf of all of us in the Inland Port, your staff has been incredible to work with, and we really appreciate all of your effort as we work to put this project area plan and budget together. It's been an incredible collaboration. And again, thank you very much to the staff for accommodating us here today. With that, that concludes our presentation, members of the board. As the administrative staff of the Utah Inland Port Authority, we endorse the creation of the Virk Industrial Park as an inland port project area, and we'd be glad to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Thanks, Stephen. Thank you. Appreciate it. And it's Fiesta Days week, right? Or does that start tomorrow?
Yes. Just getting started.
We're happy to be here. Thank you. Any comments, questions from board members? We had some questions last month, so I think I'll wait to make my comment at the end before we vote, but thank you very much. Thanks to the mayor for welcoming us, and to members of the council for welcoming us as well, and working with our staff. It's been a great collaboration over the last few months. All right, with that, let's move on to the general public comment portion of the meeting. Larry, if you'll open up the queue. If you wish to comment virtually, now is your time to raise your hand and be added to the queue. Again, said this at the beginning of the meeting, once we start the public comment, we will no longer accept any more virtual comments. Upon recognition of from myself, the speaker shall approach the microphone or be unmuted if they're online and give the comment. No person addressing the story shall be allowed to comment more than once. And again, we are going to limit those to 2 minutes, and we'll get through as many as we can here in our time. So the first one up, here in person is James Westwater. Mr. Westwater? Larry, you'll start our timer.
Hello.
Time is yours.
Hello, Utah Inland Port Authority. I'm Dr. James Westwater, a 20-year resident of Spanish Fork. I really like living here. We're forecast to reach 107 degrees today, If Spanish Fork is not warm enough for you, please help make it hotter by paving over farmland with an inland port. If Spanish Fork is too healthy for you, please replace farming and farmland with an inland port, a huge warehouse industrial trucking facility, which will generate more harmful air pollution that both precipitates and aggravates virtually all the same diseases known to be caused by smoking: lung, heart, and brain diseases, miscarriages, birth defects, and stillbirths, multiple types of cancer, and even diseases like diabetes and arthritis. If Spanish Fork is too laid-back, quiet, and rural-feeling, please replace farming and farmland with an inland port that traffic congestion, truck traffic, noise, and air pollution that come with it. If Spanish Fork has too healthy an environment, by all means, please replace wetlands and wildlife habitat with concrete and steel. If you like public tax dollars being used to make some private developers wealthier, an inland port in Spanish Fork is right for you and for those poor developers. If you like determining a city's future without adequate public input and without a thorough, detailed, rigorous, independent, science-based study of the health consequences and the alleged need for port, then this Island Pork Barrel project is right for you.
Thank you.
And unfortunately, our much loved city of Spanish Fork. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Westwater. Larry, to you first, someone online.
Yes, our first online comments will be from Dita Seed.
Dita, time is yours.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I'm Dita Seed with the Center for Biological Diversity, and I'm commenting today on a couple things. One, I'd like everyone to know that, I'm sure you all know this, but the public to know that the developers of the Spanish Fork Inland Port are the same people who had their hands out for money, for subsidies in the Salt Lake City location. And, you know, the consequences of the debacle that happened in Salt Lake City is that we're still paying, or I will pose this as a question, are you still paying the Gardner Company $120,000 a month for a property that is, that was supposed to be used for a transloading facility that is now just sitting vacant? These are tax dollars at issue here. This is a big deal. How will Spanish Fork be different? Again, the same developers are involved. The impact to wetlands is really a big concern. And, the so-called, I hear the echo, Golden Spike Inland Port is a huge threat to the Bear River Delta. Its location, the Brigham City location is just half a mile from the Bear River Migratory Bird Refuge. This kind of industrialization at a time when the wetlands are so threatened is really should cause concern for everyone. And then the fact that we're subsidizing it is a cause for even more concern. There just have not been adequate assessments of the impact to local water quality and quantity that these kinds of industrial developments that the port contemplates and is approving will create. So, you know, Tooele, Bear River, Spanish Fork, Salt Lake City, these are all in the great Salt Lake Basin. And we know what we're facing in terms of water quality and quantity issues already, without this added burden and without any kind of analysis on your part. And again, this isn't the market. This is us incentivizing this development.
Yeah, I don't know if you can hear us, but your time is up.
I'm sorry. Okay. Bye.
Linda Bartholomew here in the room. Ms. Bartholomew, the time is yours.
We've lived in Spanish Fork since 1977 and have loved it. We love the small town feel. We love the people. But lately, because of all the high density housing that they've put up, I have to schedule if I need to go downtown because the roads are horrible. I think unless they do something about the road conditions, it's going to be worse because even if it's people working out there, they're going to probably move to Spanish Fork or close. And that's going to make it worse. And I think also that we were not informed enough before this decision was made by the city council. And so I think they need to take a long, hard look at that between the population of Spanish Fork, which has quadrupled since we moved here. But the roads have not. And it's tough to get anywhere. So that's kind of the only thing I really had concern about is I'm worried about the impact on the so-called small town living, which is what we liked about here. I grew up in Salt Lake and I wouldn't move back there on a bet.
Thanks, Ms. Burnett. Oh, well, I bet you that's the heat.
That was my signal.
That was divine intervention there.
So we have not lost our Zoom.
Okay. We're going to do one more Zoom and one more in person to meet our timeline here. And we're going a little bit over the timeline, but Larry?
I bet your generator's kicked in.
Okay, well, let's go.
Online is Larry Dean.
I don't know if you can hear us, but let's move to David. Is it Panikin? I can't. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Board, my name is David Hennifer. I'm a member of the private development group, the Ritchie Company. with a partner, the local family, respected family, the Hill family. I think we are the largest landowner in the protected boundaries. And we want to be very public about the fact that we endorse and support and encourage the board to approve this project. And I'll just briefly with my time highlight a couple of reasons that are stand out to us, and I suspect you all are aware. This particular location, in its proximity to the great ports of the West Coast, the time it takes to move goods from there to here, make this an ideal spot, not only in Utah, but in the Western United States, for the movement of goods and for really the stimulation of interstate commerce. And then as an inland port project to consider, this one is unique, as Ben mentioned earlier. To have an airport right in the middle of it, to be bordered on the east side by the intersection of a major freeway and a major highway, to have rail service at the bottom, just introduces the elements that make this site a unique site to capture this. And if I might just make a quick comment about the jobs that it brings, even in the regional distribution of goods, it's changing. If you go to these modern warehouses and you get a chance to get inside Amazon's in Utah, they are incredible. It's not what the public thinks of a warehouse. Something out of the 50s, where some low-paid person is being paid to stack pallets in a corner of a dark, dingy warehouse. That's not this. These movements, these logistical systems that they tend to often invest in the building, often cost more than the building itself, personal property. And the workers, they have to have a tech background. And so if they go to work here, they'll either be trained in high-tech skills or they'll be recruited. As companies are beginning to fight for those kind of employees, the salary that they earn is increasing. So thank you. We hope that the board will vote to pass this question.
Mr. Hennifer, thank you. Apologies on not being able to read your writing on your last name. I'll get it right next time. Members of the public, members of the board, we thank those who shared their comments today. We recognize the importance of the hearing. Some of you did not get to comment. We lost you on Zoom or here in time. We've ran out of time. So again, you can leave your comments in writing at inlandportauthority.utah.gov. All right, now we will go on to approve the items on the agenda. We're going to start with the approval of the business recruitment incentive for Northrop Grumman. Ben, will you display the slide for the proposed motion? Maybe?
Yes, I got kicked out of the meeting.
We're not going to get it on the screens here in the room. The system's still down.
Larry, would you mind just reading it in? I can read it in as well.
It's the final page of the in your packet, right before the orange tab.
All right, I can read it. The Utah Inland Port Authority recommends the annual project area incentive / property tax differential rebate equivalent to 10% of the assessed property tax post completion of the development. This rebate will provide yearly for no more than 25 years, provided continued operation within the project area during that time. Incentive approval is subject to the following: completion of contract agreement and submission of corporate stewardship plan. And again, this is in the Northwest Quadrant, so we are subject to all of these stewardship plans from the city of Salt Lake City. With that, any questions? Yes, Jerry.
I apologize for my voice, but I think it's important that everyone know that incentives provided by the state of Utah are almost all, they're all post-performance. None of them are pre. We don't hand out money until a corporation has produced and are able to show what they can do. So if that's a form of a tax rebate, they have to produce the tax before the rebate. And I think it's important that everyone understand that. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move that the Inland Port approve the 10% tax differential incentive to Northrop Grumman.
Thank
Thank you for that motion. Do we have a second? I think we lost Miles.
So. I would second.
Perfect. Larry, if you want to do roll call, please.
Yes. Mike Schultz?
Yes.
Jerry Stevenson?
Yes.
Abby Osborne?
Yes.
Miles Hansen, I don't know if you can hear me.
Oh, he just texted me yes. I don't know if that's...
Great. So
if that is...
He can hear you.
He can hear you. Wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
I motion that that motion passes unanimously. We will now consider the motion to approve the personnel policy presented earlier. It's Board Policy 11, found in your packet. We can have a motion on those changes that Amy walked through with us earlier.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve number 11, was it?
Board Policy
Board
11.
Policy yes. Number 11.
Thank you.
And I would second that.
Perfect. Larry?
Yes. Mike Schultz?
Yes.
Gary Stevenson?
Yes.
Abby Osborne?
Yes.
And Miles Hansen?
Yes.
I'll let you know if he texts. Perfect. Director Hart, would you take us a few minutes and share what this project area means to the Port Authority on the VRC Industrial Park project plan?
All right. Happy to. Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just mention first that for those who are interested, after this, directly after this meeting, which will be after this vote of the board, we'll adjourn to the Heritage Room for a panel and media opportunity as well. For those who are interested in attending, we'll do that literally directly following this meeting. Let me just first say that when it comes to understanding why and how a group like the Inland Port would create a project area, let me just take a step back. When we're talking about economic growth and what it is we want to leave for the next generation, I think these conversations are critically important. And I think there's a lot of people who wonder, is this even the role of government at all? Just stick to building roads or what have you. However, we've learned over many decades in the state of Utah that when we're working together collaboratively, we can do so much more than when we're working on our own. And so the project area concept, along with the logistics and some of the other items that we're proposing, can be a little bit complicated, and I understand that. More than anything else, what we're saying with this project is that we are going to work together between the state, the port, and Spanish Fork City, and I would add Utah County, to ensure that we have the best possible economic outcomes that the city has prepared this area for. I want to give a huge shout out to the elected officials and the staff at Spanish Fork City, to Mayor Mike Mendenhall, Council members Chad Argyle, Stacy Beck, Shane Marshall, Kevin Euler, and Jesse Carden. I know I've seen most of the city council members here. Thank you for working with us. You have our commitment, and I want to speak off on behalf of the entire organization that our goal here is to help you achieve the economic goals and the economic future for your city that you have envisioned. And more than anything else, that's our aim and our goal in this project area. So as we work together, we hope that we can recruit the businesses here that the community wants. We hope that we can create a more sustainable transportation and logistics opportunities for shippers in the community. But more than anything else, and I believe this action, this collaboration that you're seeing today will be one of the most important economic decisions to have happened in Utah County in the last 50 years. And I absolutely believe that. And the reason I believe that is because it shows, one, we're working together. We have an identified vision. And three, I think there's going to be collaborative resources to help pull this off and ensure that we create the right type of development. And also that as we create these access points, and we've talked about these before, as we create better access points, that's going to take traffic pressure off other parts of the state, notably the northwest quadrant of Salt Lake City. All of the state is interconnected, and the more we work together to find solutions that everyone can work with and that empower communities, the more we want to be able to bring these solutions to reality. And that is what today is all about. So to the board, to the members of the community that are here today, to the elected officials, the staff that have helped, Dave, Seth,
For all of those who helped make this reality, for all of those who wonder what this will be, we hope that we can show you exactly the value of this collaboration and this partnership. But to the board, we are, as staff, recommending an enthusiastic approval for the creation of the VIRC Industrial Park project area. And Madam Chair, we now turn it back to the board for action on this item.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yes, Senator.
Be prepared to make a motion.
Okay. Any comments before motion? Larry, we're going to let you read in the resolution into the record.
Great. This is resolution 2023-06, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority adopting the VIRC Industrial Park Project Area Plan.
Wonderful. Thank you, Senator. I'll take your motion at this time.
Thank you. And I would move that the Utah Inland Port Authority adopt the VIRC area as a project area.
One second.
Wonderful. Larry, Miles can hear us online still.
Great. Jerry Stevenson.
Aye.
Mike Schultz.
Yes.
Abby Osborne.
Yes.
Miles Hansen.
Yes.
Yes.
I can vouch for that.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Jerry, comment?
Yeah, just a comment. You know, I think someone's going to come up with a very unique acronym for VIRC. Not sure what it will be, but someone will find that. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you all for coming today. That will conclude our July meeting. As you've heard many times, there will be a number of items on our August agenda. I don't think we have a date yet set for that, but the 22nd of August. So we will see you in Box Elder County on the 22nd of August. With that, I'll take a final motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Non-debatable.